Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Wednesday, January 26, 2022. This is Alf, directly speaking from the Netherlands in Europe. It's 10 p.m. I don't give a crap. We are because I'm here with my friend and the one and only Darius Dale, founder and CEO of 42 Macro, and we got to unpack what Jay Powell just told you. How are you doing, Darius?
I think you mean Drew Rosenhaus. I'm great, though, my friend. How are you doing today?
It's good. It's good. So let's give a bit our top reading, effectively, of what Jay Powell said. I'm going to start, if you don't mind, Edie. I'm the host, but I'm going to take this benefit here. So we can wrap up the press conference in about 30 seconds with the following statement. Journalist, Powell, what do you think of the economy? Jay Powell, I'm hawkish. Jay Powell, what do you think of the yield curve? It's flattening. Are you afraid of that? I don't give a crap. I'm hawkish. Jay Powell, what do you think is going to be the effect if you keep on tightening like that? The economy is perhaps not growing as fast as before. Look at the stock market. Jay Powell, I don't care. I'm hawkish. That's more or less a summary from my side. What do you think, Didi?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's the Drew Rosenhaus joke there. You know, the next question, please. No, so I think it's really simple. The statement removed the hawkish right tail from the sort of timing and pace and magnitude and all the uncertainty around Fed policy normalization this year. The press conference just put the hawkish right tail back on there. It really undid a lot of what was accomplished in the statement. I'm not sure to what benefit, but I do believe the sort of nimble quote is the sort of market-oriented person that is Powell sort of wanted to leave that in there just to give them some flexibility.
Yeah. So it's important to talk about scenarios here because nobody knows exactly what's going to happen, but everybody was looking for more clarity going forward. Yep. And so let's talk about the tails of the distribution, right? So Powell was asked a couple of times, what do you think of 50 basis point hike? Is that a possibility? So people were asking, journalists were asking him, Powell, can you remove this right tail risk from the distribution? Mm-hmm. Or Powell, will you hike actually in the big meetings where you also put out projections, economic projections, so every basically four times in a year? Or can you also hike in the intermediate meetings, in the smaller meetings? So that will mean being able to hike all the way to seven times this year. And he also didn't remove basically neither of these right tail risks of hiking 50 basis point and hiking more often than four times. Those remain residual risks. Did he correct me if I'm wrong, but he didn't take them off the equation.
Yeah, no, you absolutely did not. I mean, it effectively said, look, we have to be responsive to however inflation dynamics continue to come in, which means the markets are not going to get any relief as it relates to certainty. Markets love certainty. Markets hate uncertainty. So definitely agree with you in terms of what the market was looking for today. I would argue the removal of the 50 basis point hike risk was a big instrument there. And then as well as the sort of potential hiking off schedule as it relates to in the meetings in between those that contain some updated summary of economic projections.
Yeah. So, and Darius, let's talk about what were the macro reasons that Powell gave to the audience on why he doesn't want to remove any right tail hawkishness from this statement. So about the labor market or about inflation and the economy, what's your takeaway from what he said?
Yeah. So, I mean, look, the Fed it appears that Jay Powell, at least on its own in the press conference, has finally caught up to where we've been. And we've been talking about this on this program for a couple of months now, finally caught up to where we've been with respect to labor market dynamics. The labor market is incredibly tight. Brian, if you put that chart up, that wages chart where we show the employment cost, the quits rate, the blue line, relative to the employment cost index, which is the sort of the best, broadest measure of employment of wages. And the quits rate's at an all-time high, accelerating to an all-time high. And the employment cost index, as a function of that, is accelerating to a 16-year high as well. An 18-year high. My apologies there. This is a critical dynamic, and it's really being driven by something that the Fed, in my opinion, doesn't necessarily have a whole heck of a lot of control over. If you look at the labor supply chart I sent you, Brian, the middle panel in that labor supply chart shows the prime working age labor force participation rate. So we've seen a step function increase in the number of people back into the labor market, you know, the sort of step function decreases in unemployment rates, particularly in affected cohorts like African Americans, Hispanics, people without high school diplomas, low income labor, and things of that nature. But one thing that has not improved from a labor supply perspective in recent months is the prime working age labor force participation rate. For whatever reason, people, you know, in prime working ages have not really sort of budged as it relates to coming back into the labor force. And that number has not improved since July. And so there is a supply demand dynamic going on with respect to labor. The Fed thought it was cyclical. It may become structural. And that's something that, in our opinion, is the number one reason why Powell is out there not removing the right tail of hawkishness.
Yeah. So there are two sides of this labor force participation rate, Darius. Let's unpack it for our listeners. So one side of it, of the story, is that as the pool of available labor or working age population in the economy doesn't become as big as it was before. So for everybody, labor force participation rate is about 1.5% below what it was before pandemic. And while aging of the population naturally leads to this number to, let's say, gradually in a trend fashion to be lower, the Fed estimates that a full percentage point is due to COVID-related reasons. So retirements that are, you know, related not to aging, but to something else. Mm-hmm. So if the pool of available labor actually shrinks, then you have generally two effects. The first is that as you have less people in the labor force competing for a lot of jobs, aggregate demand has been pretty strong. So the demand for labor is very high and the supply of labor is actually pretty small. Mm-hmm. Wage pressures might actually increase. And Powell also mentioned that he's watching if if real wages would turn from negative to positive and above productivity rates, then it would be pretty worried because this would be a self-reinforcing mechanism for inflationary pressures. Mm-hmm. The other side of the equation, though, is real growth over time. Because if your labor force is structurally smaller than before, then you have less people contributing actively to real GDP growth over the long term and real earnings, and you have more people that are actually retired or outside the labor force that consume but do not contribute actively to the economy. So from a real growth perspective, this could have been a, let's say, dovishly interpreted development in the labor market, this sticky lower participation rate, but Powell is choosing to focus only on the potential wage implications of this lower participation rate. Is that a fair assessment, Darius?
Yeah, and it's a fair assessment. Just consider, I 100% agree with everything you just said, and thank you for unpacking that. It's a definitely a fair assessment, and I think he's correct to have that that view. Just thinking about where we are in the inflation dynamics, you know, so it's not a secret that inflation is elevated. You know, you look at core PCE to 30-something year high, or headline CPI here, this inflation chart we Brian's going to put up. You know, obviously at a 40-year high, you know, right thereabouts on headline. You know, we're at the wrong point in the inflation cycle to be overly concerned about growth. And I would argue we're at the wrong point in the financial condition cycle to be overly concerned about, you know, financial conditions, right? You know, after five, you know, our 9-10, or I think at the intraday, we hit a 12% drawdown on the stock market. That's not enough to materially change the outlook for what we're talking about with respect to the labor market. And quite frankly, it's not enough to materially change the outlook with respect to growth of a medium term. You know, the kind of those cards are already on the table. And so to going back to sort of like what the ultimate implications are for asset markets is that the range, the distribution of outcomes as it relates to Fed policy normalization remains as wide as it was when we woke up this morning. And that's a negative from the perspective of risk assets.
Yeah, bravo, Darius. So investors actually, when they take risk, they like a narrow set of future probabilistic outcomes and this narrow set to be as positive as possible in terms of future outcome for them so that they can take risks more aggressively. And this press conference has basically widened again the range of possible outcomes because Powell hasn't cut the most hawkish tail of the distribution. That's the summary, and that's why the rates market is reacting the way it is, and that's why, especially at the front end, because now if you're a bond trader, you need to price the chance that at the front end, the Federal Reserve will effectively release this right tail of the distribution. There is a residual chance, which has not been removed by Powell, that they will act even stronger than previously anticipated. And that's also why, as an equity investor, you're having a hard time taking risks. And you were pointing out before the show that the Nasdaq had what exactly? The strongest intraday reversal, you told me.
Yeah, the Nasdaq at one point was up 3%. Just as the market was going, reading through the statement, which again, I will make this point very clear. The statement did, in fact, reduce the tail of the hawkish right tail of probable outcomes. It shrank the distribution of probable outcomes. And then obviously Powell came back and widened it again. And so the Nasdaq, which was up 3% at one point in the session, obviously closed down. You know, that intraday reversal, as I heard on Bloomberg, is the biggest intraday reversal we've seen since August of 2015. Now, we didn't make new lows, you know, or I think we bottomed in early September of 2015. Fact check me on that. But the reality is, you know, that there was some, you know, we do need to see something else, some other catalyst come to the forefront in terms of arresting the decline in stocks and broader risk appetite.
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of today's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Yeah, and when you see the moves that front-end real interest rates have had, I mean, like two-year yields went up more than 10 basis points, five-year yields too, while inflation expectations that I'm checking on Bloomberg right now haven't actually moved that much. Real yields have actually repriced very aggressively post-press conference, signaling a tightening again in financial conditions. And there was this nice interview that Rob Arnott had with Martin Leibowitz at Real Vision, where they talk exactly about the effect of higher interest rates and real interest rates on the future cash flows discounted in growth equities and what this interconnection might actually play out. Let's listen to that for a second. Mm-hmm.
First of all, obviously, as inflation goes up, nominal rates go up, and then real rates will follow because the Fed response will make it happen. Mm-hmm. So with higher rates, stronger discounting of future flows means lower prices in general for just about all assets that are based upon future flows. However, it's worth noting, it's worth noting that for growth equities, while it's often believed that they basically are damaged by higher inflation, what's really true is that they're damaged for sure at the outset of a burst of inflation. But over the longer term, it may be that these companies, which after all have greater pricing power than most firms, will be able to accommodate the effects of inflation and should be able to actually, dare I say it, even become more profitable as they use inflation as perhaps an air cover to achieve greater profitability.
For anybody interested in listening to the full interview, it's on the Real Vision website, Essential Plus and Pro Tiers. What do you think of the effect that higher real interest rates will have or might have, Darius, on several sectors of the stock market? I know that you have been very, very bearish high beta stocks. Great call, I have to say.
We have, my friend. We have.
I don't want to take credit. Come on. But you have been very vocal about that, and rightfully so. What's your view on stock market and stock market sectors? Because our audience, I guess, is scratching their head at, is there a place where I can still invest in the stock market without being actually thrown under the bus, which is not energy stocks and financials, which are really doing very well. What's your view on the overall stock market situation here?
Yeah, no, that's a wonderful question. And really taking it back to the impetus, which is a conversation about real interest rates and ultimately their impact on different sector leadership, style factor leadership, overall, you know, multiples and risk appetite in general. You know, I think that sort of conversation, you know, as investors, we run the risk of overly simplifying things and sort of, you know, become and really re-anchoring and constantly re-anchoring our processes, our investment process on whatever the topic du jour of the day is. And right now, clearly, is financial tightening through the lens of real interest rates. That doesn't mean the growth cycle has gone anywhere. It doesn't mean the credit cycle has gone anywhere. That doesn't mean the inflation cycle has gone anywhere. And each of these independent cycles, and oh, by the way, there's this thing called the fiscal policy cycle as well. All these independent cycles, or sorry, they're not independent, they're reflexive, they're codependent, but the reality is they haven't gone anywhere. And so it does matter. The shape and slope of the growth curve really will have an outsized influence on the amount of risk investors can take in the stock market. We know growth is already modestly decelerating off of its cycle peak that it recorded earlier, and are sort of, you know, kind of in mid-2021. That's certainly already within consensus expectations. But as you and I have been talking on this program for a few months now, consensus expectations for growth remain very elevated. If you look at Bloomberg consensus user ECFC function out there, for you Bloomberg subscribers, the Bloomberg consensus is expecting, this is economist consensus, Wall Street consensus, Jan Hatzius, all the big names you know out there, you know, all the big names we've learned from over the course of our careers. They expect real GDP growth in the U.S. to be, you know, 160 basis points above trend. And this is 160 basis points above trend in a year where we just heard from the head of the Federal Reserve that the hawkish right tail on the monetary policy has refused to be cut off. It's a year where we know there's no Build Back Better agenda. There's no more fiscal easing. I think Justice Breyer retired today. So now we're going to shift the focus from, you know, maybe even getting child tax care credit done, to let's, you know, hit the midterms, or hit the, start hammering the midterms on who's going to replace Justice Breyer. So this is a hairy situation, and we know it's hairy. We know high beta risk assets are likely to come under increasing amounts of trouble as we progress throughout this year. I've said in our research, hey, there's still a window based on a confluence of factors that, you know, we'll update our subscribers on in tomorrow's Lead Off Morning Note. There's still a window for a potential relief rally. But the Jay Powell did his best to sort of slam that window shut this afternoon.
Yeah, and I think before going deeper into the stock market here, also, you know, backtracking a bit to the interview content, we need to talk for a second more about the bond market and how is it reacting to today's Powell statement. So I put a chart out of the yield curve slope between 5 year and 30 years. I use swaps, that's a cleaner version than bonds, but for the sake of the argument, without overcomplicating it, the slope of the yield curve between 5 year and 30 year measured appropriately is now at 25 basis points. So literally 25 basis points. There is not so much room left. While everybody focuses on the slope between 2 and 10 years, the slope between 5 and 30 years is also very significant, because a lot of the borrowing that happens in the economy has now been basically moved towards the long duration borrowing. So long end bond yields are very relevant for financial conditions nowadays. Yeah. And 5 year bond yields tend to tell you what investors and traders actually expect from the Fed over the foreseeable future, rather than only over the next 2 years. So the spread between 5 and 30 years is very important, has been flattening relentlessly. Made a call last year when 5-30s were at 119 basis points. They're now at 25 basis points. So the curve has been flattening relentlessly, which is basically signaling, and today as well, post the press conference is flattening too, which is basically signaling that yes, investors are repricing the chances that the Fed is going to be even more aggressive in hiking maybe 6 times, 7 times, 8 times over the next 2 years, and maybe 10 times over the next 5 years. But then there is a cap. Mm-hmm. According to the bond market, the highest you can go is about 1.5, 1.75% in Fed funds rate. And then once you get there for the year 6 to year 30, in order to make the curve steeper, you would need real growth and inflation to be able to produce decent prints despite federal funds rate having reached 1.75%. And the market just disagrees with that. It's basically telling you, if you get there fast enough and you tight fast enough, we're basically going to imply that you are done. You are done. From year 5 going forward, you are basically removing the uncertainty for the bondholders. You are basically telling them you are safe by owning 30-year bonds, because we're going to tighten so much that inflation and growth are going to come down. So if you own 30-year bonds, you're going to benefit from it, actually. And that's why, while 5-year yields go up, 30-year yields actually don't move that much, and the curve flattens till the point it basically inverts. I think it will invert sooner or later, and the markets will be testing Powell. What do you think of curve inversion, Darius?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's today he more or less confirmed that it's going to happen, right? Because you know, they effectively said, hey, look, we're going to do quantitative tightening based on principal reinvestment or the lack thereof, and it's likely to be sort of, you know, increasingly concentrated towards their mortgage-backed security portfolio, which is, in our opinion, code word for we're not going to sell down long duration into the market in order to maintain a steep yield curve, which means I don't know if he's paying attention to these dynamics. I assume he is. But, I mean, we're very close to curb inversion to the extent that they do anything incrementally hawkish from this point today, right? And so that in our opinion, will be a leading indicator for a below-trend growth slowdown that may start to materialize around Q4, even in the early part of 2023. So that's very much our view. We've always said, and you certainly agree with us in terms of your credit impulse framework, you know, that this was going to be a year of normalization with respect to growth. And the speed of that normalization is obviously showed up, is starting to show up in the yield curve. And if it gets any worse, then risk assets are all hell's going to break loose, quite frankly.
Yes, I think the market is now going to try and chase and challenge really Powell's stance, especially if the data comes in weaker as we expect, and they have been coming weaker. January PMIs in America were 50.6. That's the weakest print over the last 6 years. Sure, Omicron played a role, but it's remarkable that we had the weakest print in 6 years in PMIs. And Powell is talking about the booming economy and tightening and not removing the right tail of the tightening distribution from the minds of investors here. So not a surprise from my side to see a reversal in risk assets here. I also plotted another chart that is part of the financial conditions index because Powell was asked about that. And he said, well, you know, they have been tightening, but actually he almost endorsed the tightening in financial conditions by saying, you know, we work by a signaling effect and we see that market participants have taken in stride our signaling effect and financial conditions are basically moving according to what we would, you know, find okay to be. One of the indicators in this financial condition index is credit spreads in junk bonds, high yield bonds. And these credit spreads are around 330 basis points today. And at the lows, they were 290, 280 basis points. But they have been widening. So these credit spreads have been going up a bit, but at a very slow pace. This is nothing too scary from a credit spread perspective. We're talking about the lowest rated part of the corporate bond market. Mm-hmm. And so this is one of the angles where the market could try and challenge Powell together with the high beta stock. So if the market goes after this stance, we'll probably do it on the weakest links, right, in the financial condition index, so that to challenge the stance, basically, to see whether the Federal Reserve can hold it. What do you think ultimately is going to be the end game of all of this, Darius? I mean, if you look at the probable outcomes over the next few months, how do you think this all ends?
Yeah, well, I think this all ends, and you know, sort of been saying this in our macro scouting reports, our monthly presentations for a few months now, it ends with the market fearing that the Fed is on a runaway train to tightening policy at the same time the U.S. economy is having a growth scare. Now, in terms of the probable point and when that occurs, our model is saying the earliest that potentially occurs March, and sort of the latest it'll potentially occur sometime in Q3. I don't have a crystal ball, nobody does, but in terms of helping investors prepare for that potential risk, because that, in our opinion, is how you get a market crash. That's how you get a Q4 18. That's how you get a early 2016. That's how, you know, that's how you, these things start to happen, is when the policy expectation materially diverges from the growth expectation. And the one thing that can cause that is a continuation of the wage pressure dynamics of sticky inflation kind of remaining sticky. We know inflation's coming down. Inflation's gonna normalize. Everyone's got the same autoaggressive modeling framework, and we all see supply chains ameliorating in terms of the PMIs, the supplier delivery times, all that data. So inflation's gonna come down. But will it come down quick enough for the Fed to say, oh, please give me something to back off of this policy tightening initiative, right? If you use financial conditions as the reason the Fed backs off, then you will lose money as an investor. It can't be your leading indicator, right?
Yeah, of course.
Because, yeah, you can't go, oh, well, if the stock market's down 20 to 30%, the Fed will back off. Well, we're trying to help you avoid the 20 to 30% drawdown. And so in terms of looking at economic data, forward-looking market expectations and fixed income and rates markets, economic data that's projectable and forecastable, I don't see anything that can get them off of that path. I think we're headed for that.
Yeah, I'm afraid that the left side of the drawdown distribution is unfortunately wide open here, despite having had already quite a drawdown in broad indexes, although it must be said that certain part of the stock market and certain asset classes have been doing pretty well. Commodities, one of that, financials, one of that as well. So there have been places where to hide this year and still preserve purchasing power. we have to jump to questions, I'm afraid, already, Darius, because we have a gazillion of those. So multiple people on the Real Vision website are actually asking, what's going on in gold? I mean, can you give us a gold update given the recent Fed meeting?
No, I actually can't. I'm probably the worst gold trader in North America, have been for the past 6 months. So I've been confounded by gold. I'll be very honest about that. What are your thoughts?
Well, I was short gold at the beginning of the year to try and play the proxy to higher real interest rate. I got the real interest rate move very well, but gold didn't do anything. Didn't do absolutely anything. So as always, when I can't explain what's going on, I just pair my positions, and I have no position in gold nowadays. After the press conference today, I might want to consider leaning on the short side again. I don't have a trade on, so I'm not going to say I might consider and then claim I was right 3 weeks later. If I have a trade on, you can see it at the Macro Compass or on Twitter. I don't have any trade on gold, but what he said today and the moves in real rates and where we are potentially going in terms of tightening the entire financial conditions perhaps don't bode that well. But so far this year, the correlations of gold to any underlying macro driver have actually broken. So it's a pretty confounding asset to trade. I agree with Darius here. Let's see. We have another
one. Let me make one quick comment. This is something you brought up in our Macro Bundle Live discussion earlier today, which is, as investors, what we want to do is shrink the distribution of probable outcomes. Like, there's this wide range of distributions that could happen with growth, inflation, policy, geopolitics. And what you're trying to do as investors, by doing research and by, you know, having a risk management strategy, is reduce, you know, cut off the tail as much as you possibly can. We never really truly are able to do that.
Yeah. Other question for both of us. Nicholas says on the exchange, what are your thoughts around the lagging labor force participation rate, the main drivers for it? I think this is an important question to go back to, because it will ultimately drive the part of the inflationary pressures and also part of the rhetoric that the Fed has about the labor market. So what's your view, actually? How is this labor force participation rate going to play out, Darius?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen surveys and estimates. You know, we've seen 1 million people leave the labor market as a function of retirement, early retirement, rather. You know, there's all these surveys that are coming out. I don't think anybody really knows for sure yet until we actually look at the data from a backward-looking perspective, you know, after the cycle. But the reality is, I think there are some other things going on as well. Let's start by saying people probably feel a lot richer than they did prior to the pandemic, at least those with assets, those families and households with financial assets. And as a function of feeling richer, plus the confluence of a lot of people moving out of the city, where prices tend to be much higher, you know, the cost of living tends to be much higher. You know, moving out of the city means you can go from a two-income household to a single income household and really not materially drag on the quality of your lifestyle. And so I think that's a factor as well. Again, it's impossible to quantify this. We're going to have to do some serious deep dive, deep work. The government will, when we look back on all this. But again, the question is not, because I think the premise of the question, if you can kind of read in between the lines, is, yeah, but the labor force participation rate could just spring higher and then it ameliorates all these problems. And yes, that is certainly a risk in terms of a rapid improvement in labor supply here in the U.S. economy. I don't know. I don't see anything that suggests that is a reasonable probability of occurring over the next few months.
Yeah, right?
That's the critical. It's the timeline. It's the duration by which that occurs. Right. To me, I think that's the key takeaway. With your thoughts as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically impossible to forecast. But I tend to agree on the fact that if you were planning to retire on capital gains, then perhaps you have also made choices to make sure that you have a buffer around this capital gain. So assuming that a 10% drawdown in risk assets will have to bring you back to the labor force seems quite a harsh assumption. I mean, if I were planning to retire only to live out of my capital gains, I would A, make sure I lock some of those in to start with, and then second, I would have a buffer around those. So I don't think it's that simple to assume that if risk assets go down, then labor force participation goes up because people have to come back into the labor force. But again, almost impossible to forecast.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
There is then a question on let's say the long bond trade, and a question about real estate, so REITs in general, real estate investment trusts. So what do you think of those, of the long bond trade and of real estate investment trusts?
Yeah, when the market is ready to fully price in everything we're talking about as it relates to this Wile E. Coyote moment, if you will, between Fed policy, the Fed policy outlook and the growth outlook, you know, bonds are going to start to rally well ahead of that. So it's my job as a risk manager to help investors say spot that moment where it's looking like you got to start legging back into bonds in a material size. You know, again, it's in our opinion, that's within the next 1 to 3 months at the longest. Because again, I think we're very long in the tooth as it relates to the yield curve flattening we've already seen. We're very long in the tooth in terms of the bond market pricing in how hawkish this Fed can be. Yeah. And we look at as your brilliant chart about the short end, really it basically says, hey, look, we're not going to be able to digest much more than this. You know, this economy, our star hasn't moved just because of Jay Powell's press conference. That's the market's expectation of, you know, the neutral policy rate, sort of the NARU, the non-inflation accelerating unemployment rate, that hasn't moved because of Jay Powell's press conference. So eventually the bond market's going to get to the point where it's like, we've overcooked it. Time to go the other way, because the next major policy pivot will be back towards dovish. It may not come, you know, over the next, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 months or even 2 or 3 quarters, but the bond market is obviously looking forward much further than that.
I completely agree. I'm long treasuries again. Yeah. Put out there in the wide, nothing to hide. It's on the macro compass, it's on Twitter, long since 185% 2 weeks ago. It's actually a week ago, I think. It's carrying my way. The reason why I'm long the longer part of the bond curve is that the short end can become to price a bit more, but if it prices a bit more, then the yield curve will flatten anyway. So mm-hmm. I have a hard time believing that 10-year bond yields can go any higher than 185, 190%. And if they go, and if I'm wrong, I'm just going to stop out as for every trade where I'm wrong, because we are here to manage risks and try to skew the odds in our favor at the end of the day, and not to be right 100% of the times, that's impossible. Yeah. Any view on real estate, just to close it out?
Yeah, no. Real estate's one of the sectors that should do well in the environment that we're talking about. So let's go. Let's kind of run down the rap sheet of all the things that we factor in from a quantitative perspective in terms of our sector and style factor pivots or our general asset allocation views. What we're going to have is we're going to be transitioning to a state in the economy where growth and inflation are slowing simultaneously. That's positive for real estate. Growth will likely be slowing at a moderate pace initially. It could eventually start slowing at a more than moderate, a meaningful pace. That will be negative for real estate, but the moderate pace tends to be fine, as does the moderate deceleration in inflation. Quantitative tightening in this particular regime is obviously not positive for real estate, but we're not quite there yet. Policy rate tightening is not great as well, but generally speaking, the rest of the world being in a similar framework, at least as it relates to growth and inflation, those things are fine. So net, real estate is one of those sectors in the stock market, if you're an investor that has to remain fully invested, semi-fully invested. Those are one of the places you're going to want to hide from a sectoral perspective. But generally speaking, a lot of what I said today is that we're going to go from a situation where it's okay to hide to it's not okay to hide.
Yeah.
That, in our opinion, remains our base case scenario.
Well, Darius, again, thank you for being here. It's always great to have your downloads together with me and sit here together and discuss all of this. With such important events for our listeners to unpack. So thanks again for being here.
And thanks, brother. Thanks. Appreciate you. Thank you.
Thanks everybody for watching the Real Vision Daily Briefing. Maggie will be back tomorrow with Thomas Thornton. Before you go, guys, just a reminder that at midnight on Friday, the cost of joining Pro Crypto will actually go up by more than 20%. Pro Crypto is the new tier that has been successfully launched by Real Vision. You can get all the details in case you want to subscribe and the membership choices at www.realvision.com/membership/pro-crypto. As always, the conversation continues on the exchange, and tune in tomorrow to listen to what Maggie and Thomas Thornton will discuss. And thanks again for watching, guys.